All right. Hello, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. On behalf of AgriLinks, Feed the Future, and the USAID Bureau for Food Security, I would like to welcome you to our webinar today on georeference data to inform Earth observations modeling for agriculture, a discussion among collectors, users, and aggregators. My name is Julie McCarty, and I'm with the USAID Bureau for Food Security, and I'll be your webinar facilitator today, so you'll hear my voice periodically, especially during our question and answer session, and see my name throughout the chat box periodically. I'm really excited about this webinar today for a few reasons. First, it's essentially the culmination of our really excellent Earth Observations Month on AgriLinks. We've been featuring a ton of interesting blog posts, some kind of brown bag style webinars, a lot of interesting information, and you can find the links to most of those blog posts on the left side of your screen in the links box. So we encourage you to check out that blog series on AgriLinks. I'm also excited because it's been a little while since we've done an AgriLinks webinar. We've been going through some transitions at AgriLinks. It's being managed by a new contract called the Knowledge, Data, Learning, and Training Activity. And so we're excited to kind of look ahead and get restarted with our AgriLinks webinar series. So before we dive into the content today, I would like to just go over a couple of items to orient you to the webinar. First, please do use the chat box to introduce yourself and let us know where you're joining from, and thanks to everyone who has been doing that already. The chat box is your main way to communicate today, and we encourage you to use it to post questions, share resources, and discuss the topic with your colleagues on the event. We'll be collecting your questions throughout the webinar, and we'll probably answer some of them along the way in the chat box, and we'll hold some other questions until after the presentation. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded, and we will email you the recording, the transcript, and some additional resources once they're ready in about a week and a half's time. And they'll also be posted on the AgriLinks website. All right, I am going to go ahead and get this rolling and introduce two of our speakers, who will then introduce our wider suite of speakers. And the first person I'd like to introduce is Kirsten Johnson with the USAID Bureau for Food Security, who has spearheaded Earth Observations Month on AgriLinks and has really done such a wonderful job bringing this information to the Feed the Future community. She is an international population and health demographer with 20 years of experience conducting in-depth analyses of demographic and health surveys and service provision assessment data. And she's currently serving as a monitoring and evaluation technical advisor in the USAID Bureau for Food Security's Monitoring, Evaluation, and Learning Division. And you'll probably see her in the chat box, and she'll be providing a wrap-up at the end. And then the other person I'd like to introduce is Paul Tanger, who is also with the USAID Bureau for Food Security. And he is an agriculture research advisor with USAID BFS, where he manages biotechnology and crop improvement projects. And previously, as a AAAS Science and Technology Fellow at USDA NEPA, he led the launch of a new initiative focused on data science and agriculture, as well as developing open data policies and examining and visualizing impacts of research funding. And Paul is going to take it away and kick us off with an intro to the content and to our other speakers. So, Paul?
Thank you, Julie, and welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining today. I am happy to be here and excited about this topic. So I'll share some brief opening comments to frame the webinar today and lead into a great lineup of speakers, followed by a discussion after which my colleague Kirsten will close today's session. So I we'll just briefly highlight our presenters and then share some comments and then turn it over to our presenters to talk in more detail about this topic. So first up, we have Narendra Das with NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, where he's a research scientist, lead developer of the SMAP mission, looking at soil moisture data. And he's been working with the SURVEIR project and we'll be talking about some of that work in Asia today. Then we'll have Robert Hymans, University of California, works on data science applications in international development, and with an emphasis on modeling spatial variation. So he'll talk about some uses that he's been working on there. And then we have Philemon Juliana with CIMIT wheat improvement, looking at, she's a wheat breeder, and as part of several projects has been evaluating genomic selection and high throughput phenotyping methods for improved wheat varieties. And then we have Rajesh Srini at Texas A&M University, professor and director of the Spatial Sciences Lab. He has been working on the soil and water assessment tool model and modeling approaches using various sources of data. And we'll wrap up with two folks that will talk about the platforms in which some of this data is being used and aggregated. First with Estefania Pulisili, University of Maryland, master's in agriculture economics. She's been collaborating with GeoGlam and monitoring crop conditions globally, and manages aspects of that, as well as coordinating the agriculture monitoring in the Americas initiative. So last but not least, we'll have Jiawu Ku with IFPRI, part of the CGIAR platform for big data and agriculture, and looking at ways to use open multidisciplinary data and data science techniques for sustainable development impacts. All right, so I just have a couple quick comments and then I'll turn it over to our speakers. I think that Julie already highlighted that this webinar is nearing the end of the AgriLinks theme for this month of May, Earth Observations for Food Security. Just wanted to highlight again how this is part of that broader theme, and encourage you all to go back and look at some of the content that's already been shared there. You'll hear today about some of these systems and resources, and you can find more with the link there. So I'm guessing you're all here because of the great purpose statement that we put together, the description for this webinar. So I won't go too much time into reiterating that, but instead I'll share an observation. And essentially, we're hoping to improve the sharing and use of Earth observation data through the discussion today. So I thought this kind of observation captures a bit of what we've been thinking about and what we want to lead into today. And so the long tail is a phrase termed in the early 2000s to describe really large collections of rarely accessed information. This was originally observed for media, for example, books available on Amazon. But it's a common phenomenon enabled by the internet, and as sketched here in the lower right of this slide, for data as well. So in the original graphic, highly accessed popular books and movies comprise the peak on the left, like the red shaded area. And to the right, you see a slow, long distribution that demonstrates, in the original example, rarely purchased read or accessed books. So in the sketch on this slide, it's been tweaked to describe data in the same way, where well-characterized data is used a lot on the left, but lots of data potentially is never used, the long tail to the right. So today we're hoping to convene groups to learn about more data resources and talk through the organization context of how this data, where it exists and how it can be better used. And the question I think we'll come back to is, do we need better organization, different data, or all of the above? And so this got cut off a little bit, at least on my screen. I want to say that a few words about the scope of today's webinar, because we can't address and talk about everything. And just clarify how we're defining Earth observations and remote sensing. So others may have different definitions, but I believe our thinking is Earth observations is satellite-based information about the Earth, and that's versus airborne and ground-based sensors and observations and systems, for example, from planes, from UAVs, et cetera, that we generally refer to as remote sensing. And as the AngriLynx theme has highlighted, there are many use cases, and a couple include, monitoring and responding to disasters, better managing resources, detecting emerging threats, and tracking trends over time. And so we'll hear about some of those today, and then hopefully continue discussion in further forum. So just due to limited time today, I wanted to highlight some related topics that we probably won't get into too much detail. And these include PII, USA data sharing requirements, such as the DDL, sustainability of these systems and platforms, and more development of consumption and decision-making tool. Sorry about that. There we go. So more consumption of using these tools to make better decisions. So the outline of the lineup and how we're thinking about this is having three groups of people and organizations. And so one is generators of information, and the second is sort of aggregators and platforms, and the third is modelers and users, and eventually end users. And so these aren't mutually exclusive groups. As you'll see, the presenters today will all be doing a bit of these. And so we'll actually start off in reverse order with the modelers and users. And then we'll go to a couple examples of folks that are generating the data. And finally, the aggregators and platforms. So I already went through the speakers. We're kind of going to do some quick presentations about 5 minutes each. And then we're going to have some semi-structured question and answer. And then we'll have an open discussion, and Kirsten will close the session. So I'd encourage you all, as the presentations are happening, to share comments and questions through the chat box, and we'll get to those as we have time. So with that, I look forward to the presentations and a rich discussion today. Now I'd like to turn it over to Narendra, and thanks to all our presenters and organizers and all of you for joining today. Look forward to more discussion.
Thanks, Paul. Good morning, everybody. I'm in Los Angeles, North America, and I'm great to be in this group. So I'll be talking basically about what we are doing right now and what is my role and how I got connected to this and what kind of data is required in my, you know, work. So could you please go ahead with the next slide? Oh, next slide, I can do this from it. Okay, so how I am connected, basically my background is I'm a hydrologist and a remote sensing specialist, microwave remote sensing specialist, and I work for the SMAP mission and the SWAT mission and a lead algorithm developer, and but also we have projects from the NASA surveys program, and these projects were implemented, being implemented and was implemented in East Africa region, which is still ongoing with some of the survey folks. And we are active project in Lower Mekong Basin. And the project is all about drought forecast and crop yield forecast. And especially in Lower Mekong Basin, it is the rice. And in the East Africa region, it is maize. So what we do basically in these projects is we have models, which I will talk about, and we run the model in the nowcast and the forecast mode, and provide the agencies with the output. And we are still in our application readiness level is close to 8. We are working with our end users to basically use it, but we have 2 success in the U.S. with USAID uptake, basically in Lower Mekong Basin countries, where the Mekong River Commission has started using our drought product, as well as the Vietnam Academy of Water Resources have started using our drought product. So we are still working towards, you know, provide them the crop yield nowcast and forecast for that region. So that project is ongoing. And so this is the outline of the model which we developed at NASA JPL with one of my colleagues, Costas Andrades. And this is a platform where we have coupled the hydrologic model with a crop model. And this is a modified crop model which run in ensemble mode. They both run in ensemble mode, and they are capable to ingest all kind of, you know, remote sensing data, and then produce the output. So if you see on the right side here, we have 2 segments basically. One is the nowcast mode and the forecast mode. So first the hydrologic model runs and provide all the inputs to the crop model. And the crop model ingest and assimilate all the information in an ensemble mode, and then create, you know, the nowcast and the forecast. And so we do seasonal forecast 3 months in, 3 to 6 months based on the climate forecast available to us. So this whole model is known as the Regional Hydrological Extreme Assessment System. So it is an evolving process. So we are learning a lot from our users, especially those who are implementing the system in RCMRD in East Africa, as well as in ADPC, Asian Disaster Preparedness Center in Bangkok. So they are the one custodian of this model right now. They are using it, and we're learning from this. And there's a lot of things, you know, a lot of things we are still putting in there, but the core model is ready and being used. And then I will just go through one of the example what we are doing here. This is just to showcase. This is the Lower Mekong countries where this model is being implemented. And the survey project that we are working on this in this region from last 3 years. And the project is about to end. But we are in a very good shape here. And we are providing them drought outlook, the forecast as well as the nowcast, and also we will be in coming months we will be able to provide them the crop yield forecast and nowcast.
chat for...
Well, we seem to have lost Narendra. Let's see if we can get him back on. If we don't get him back on in just a moment, we can move ahead to the next speaker. And apologies for a little bit of technical difficulties and some slide formatting issues. We are working on those. But in the meantime, if you would like to download a PDF of today's slides, you can see them on the left side of your screen in the file downloads box. Narendra, are you still there? All right, I think our best bet then would be to move along to our next presenter.
The main thing that we needed him to talk about.
Please sit tight, everyone, while we just get sorted out really quickly here. Hey, Robert, are you there and ready to move ahead, to skip ahead to yours, and we can return to Narendra if needed?
I am.
Great. If you wouldn't mind, we'll move ahead to your slides, and then we can return. Robert, we are not hearing you yet. We heard you say yes, and then we've not heard you since. So please try and speak again if you can, if you need to unmute yourself.
He dropped off.
Oh, no. Looks like we might have lost Robert as well. Apologies, we're having some unexpected technical difficulties. So again, please sit tight. Let us sort this out for a couple of minutes, and then we'll get back in action.
All right, you may hear me again.
Yes, we can hear you, Robert.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm also in California. I've been dropped 4 or 5 times, and when I get back, I cannot speak. So, but I can go ahead and try now.
Go fast,
Robert.
Is this
Narendra? Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. Narendra, you're here. All right, let's go back and finish Narendra then, and we can come back to Robert.
I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, everything stopped, and you know.
Yes, apologies for that. We had some very unexpected kind of technical blip there, but we'll pick up where we left off.
Okay. Go ahead, Narendra.
He's gone again.
Right, he is gone again. We're having very odd happened.
Is it because of the upload?
With our presenters. Dropping off, so maybe we will go ahead and go to Robert for the time being. And we'll move ahead to Robert while we work on this on the back end.
Did Robert drop off?
Well, all right. I'm Robert Hammond, so I'm with you.
Good.
Should I go ahead?
Go ahead, Robert.
I'm with the University of California in Davis. This is who I am. We have several projects around spatial data and remote sensing. Today, I really like to focus a bit on crop insurance. So let me actually probably go to the next slide here. So we work mostly in East Africa, in fact, also a bit in West Africa and elsewhere, focusing particularly on maize as well as rice. And the rice is not so much in East Africa, of course. And so crop insurance. So crop insurance is this interesting and attractive technology or approach that to help farmers deal with poor years and to bridge that gap of a very bad yield that they may have is because of, say, a drought. There's a lot of interest in it. There are some success stories, but there's also failures. And the question, of course, is why are there failures? And in part, it's because of poor insurance products, policies have been devised and provided to farmers. Now, this is for, there's different issues around quality here, but certainly one important consideration is to evaluate whether the our understanding of variability in crop yields and when actually a bad event has happened is accurate enough to support these insurance projects. So remote sensing, is currently heavily used to provide an index to underpin these insurance products. The problem with these products is that these remote sensing methods is that they're often ad hoc. They're surely based on the literature and on other examples, but it's very hard to know how good they really are and which of several approaches that you might take would be the most adequate under particular conditions and in particular region for a particular crop. To improve these methods and to evaluate these methods, we really need to be able to do a better comparison. And to do so, we need large, high quality data sets.
Thank you, Robert. We are...
There he is. He's back.
Oh, I do. All right. So...
he didn't finish.
Hello. Hello.
Is that you, Narendra?
This is Narendra. I'm back. I think there is a problem when you use your inbuilt microphone from the computer. It crashes. So what I'm doing right now, I'm connecting through phone so I can go back to my presentation. Sorry about that.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you, Narendra. Let's go back.
I'm back too, so whichever you want to do.
All right. Robert, did you finish or did you have a few more words on this slide?
I haven't finished. I'm on my last slide, though, so I can finish too. So.
All right. Let's go, Robert, go ahead, and then we'll go back to Narendra and let you finish.
So essentially what I'm saying here is to have a much broader understanding of which remote sensing methods work in this domain of identifying crops and estimating yields and estimating yield loss. We need access to high quality public data in this domain. And it's going to be very interesting, people will present, there is data out there. But often one of the biggest problems is you comparing sort of, noise with noise. The collected data on crop yields often very poor. So I think, it warrants investment to get a much better data, or indeed help make data that's available that actually exists make it available. I've been part of years ago of a working group comparing ecological models, disannual species distributions. Where we were able to get data from six continents, and we got modelers, of different sorts in the room, and this sort of a bake-off, to compare these different methods. And that work has been very, very influential because we were, then for the first time able to really compile data sets with very different characteristics and have a much get a much deeper understanding about, what works where. Another very important thing about having sort of, some good public data is that you don't have too much of a barrier to entry, rather than like, a few private or closed entities owning all the data and being able to develop something and just saying kind of a just so way, like, well, this works. I think it's a public benefit to have the ability to to allow innovation in his domain. So we really need better data. So I agree with the long tail. Yes, we need to use more data that's out there, but to truly evaluate the ability of remote sensing products to do crop monitoring, crop yields particularly, I think investment in actually collecting data might be warranted. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Robert. Narendra, are you still there? Shall we go back to your...
Yeah, I'm still there. I'm through phone right now. Yeah.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and bring it back. Let's see. You are around here, correct?
Yeah, I think I'm still got disconnected from Adobe, but I can, open my presentation and I can talk through that. I think there is some problem with the Adobe. Hopefully that will work. I don't know what's going on here. I'm just crashing out all the time. So I can go through my presentation just to, where I was. So you can just, go to the next slide when I say so that everybody can hear that. So I was in slide number 22, which is basically, so what we are doing right now, as I mentioned, we have a coupled hydrological model, which works with end-to-end modeling from hydrology all the way up to the crop modeling. And what we are trying to understand here is how the drought evolution and drought onset, drought recovery is affecting the crop yield, and how this information could be utilized by our end users for making this decision making and planning of water resources management, as well as food allocation and other resource allocation. So this is one of the example where we show like one of the output from Lower Mekong region. As you could see, we have done this study was done like a couple of weeks ago, where we generated the nowcast and the forecast. It was for May 31st. So the top panel, you can see it is the severity index, which is basically from May 31st, 2018, and July 31st, 2018. And then you can see the forecast we did for the region. And is being used, this forecast is being used by the Lower Mekong countries. We also visited the site, and they confirmed that the forecast is pretty reliable, and they have been using it for their decision making and planning. And similarly, on the right side, you can see the SM soil moisture deficit index. So the model is capable to give you all kind of the suite of drought indices and products, whichever, or we can customize it according to the end user's need. And the next slide, please. The next slide is basically, this is the capability demonstration, which we are showing right now. And this is where we need the help from USAID and other agencies who contribute data on ground data. So we have capability to produce the rice yield county-wise. You can see we could do it from Vietnam all the way from 2013. We have done simulations for past 30 years, but we have done the forecast also. But what we say here, this may not be correct because we don't have the right information, the farm management practices information, right cultivar information, and irrigation amount being applied, or fertilizer being applied, rate being applied. So this is where we are basically feel ourselves deficient and need help from the agencies who have this kind of data. So the model is really catering to the end user's need, and they're very happy, but we are facing this problem of data collection And a few countries have resources and they are willing to share, but some countries, the data, whatever data is there with them is not consistent and not what we exactly want. So next slide after that. So the constraints what we are facing is the credible and quality data of farm management practices, open access digital data not available, and few of the agencies not willing to share. And this is where we need help. And some of the data are haphazard and a shorter time series. So if we want to, especially if we want to calibrate the crop models county-wise, we need some time series data set of yield and other indices of crop indices, which are not always available. And then the next slide is the potential for active collaboration with participating agencies and capacity building. So we are doing it very actively in most of the surveyed countries. Three weeks ago, we were in Vietnam and Thailand, and we have a very fruitful meeting with all the agencies, and they promised to provide us data, and we have to see what how much they provide. And so we look forward to work with USAID and this group to maximize the potential and chances to get in situ data and crop-related statistics at country, county, and district level, especially for East Africa as well as for Southeast Asia. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Narendra. And thank you all for sticking with us through this unexpected technical challenge, but we think we fixed it. We've managed to help the slides not have any formatting issues, so that should help. And we've received some advice in the chat box that perhaps it was the slides that was causing everyone to drop off. So we'll see if that fixed the issue.
I will be now connected through phone. So.
Great. Yes, the phone is always a reliable way to connect for our presenters. Philemon, are you on the line?
Yes, we are on the line here.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring it forward to your set of slides. And please take it away and let us know if you run into any troubles.
Okay, in fact, we cannot see the slides, and so we're asking you to advance them for us.
Yes, that's fine. I can do that. It would help if you, as you say next slide, also say the title of the slide you're on, just so I can triple check and make sure.
All right, very good. So I think we'll be starting out with the mission and vision of CIMMYT. I think most of you are aware that CIMMYT is a member of the CGIAR, and that we have at least a 55-year history of distribution of germplasm, the improvement of germplasm, and the evaluation of germplasm worldwide. If we go to the next slide, the global seed distribution of CIMMYT involves distributing improved materials of maize and wheat germplasm. It's the distribution is on demand of the recipient, and so the network that we have is rather ad hoc. It's not always planned. We don't always have the same location year after year, but nevertheless, we have a very extensive network of collaborators worldwide. If you go to the next slide, the International Wheat Improvement Network is what we're going to be talking primarily about today. This evaluation network distributes spring bread wheat and durum wheat and winter wheat lines globally. We have more than 28 target and replicated yield trials that we distribute. And that goes to about 240 collaborators in 80 countries. We have an enormous air freight bill because we're distributing more than 10 tons of seed annually. And it's all distributed free of charge, and it's covered by the SMTA. Now, this issue about being distributed free of charge is important because the network is a voluntary network, and the primary intent is to distribute seed to our collaborators and not necessarily to obtain high quality precise phenotyping. That's something that has come about more recently, and we're looking at ways of increasing data return. Historically, the data return rates have been 40 to 50%, but we're wanting to increase that, and we're wanting to focus on obtaining higher quality data. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Rosemary and the next slide on the platform serving ground reference data.
Thank you, Tom. So our CINET Dataverse is the platform that we are using for publishing all CINET data, including Irving data. So you can go to CINET website, www.cinet.org, which take you to CINET website there, and then you will find data under the tab Resources, which links you to a data page where you can see the links related to several other data resources. If you click Irving data on Dataverse, so it will take you to the page where you can see the all Irving data for that are published. Yes. And then there is another slide. Since there are so many clicks, I hope we are in the second slide. And you can also type or directly go to data, www.data.cinet.org, which takes you to the Dataverse page. And then if you click one of these published studies, for example, here I think 37th S-suite, and you will be able to see the metadata related to this particular study, and then all the files that are published for this particular study. You can download all those data sets, which include phenotypic data, location data, mean data, as well as raw data. So, and then if you click a particular data set, especially for the variables and traits, the phenotypic data set, then you can see all the variables that are actually mapped to crop ontology as well, so that, like, you know, with the make data interoperable. And so these are the location data, so you can see also in the columns, so there are locations like Spain, collected data from Spain as well as from Iran, and then several variables data here. So location would be the most important data for this group because since we are talking about the information. And then apart from the Irving data, so there are also important data sets that we have, and then that is like in collaboration with KSU on the Feed the Future project. So we have generated genotypic as well as phenotypic data. So anybody can go there and then download the data. So Philomene is the one who is consuming this data, and she will explain about it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And next slide, please. So we're on a slide that says predictive modeling of wheat yield using spectral indices from high-throughput phenotyping. So if you go on to the first animation there, so we have yield trials. Our yield trials are in Obregon, Mexico, and we have about 50,000 plots, small plots of lines that we phenotype using drones and airplanes. So if you click on the next animation there, you can see we use both a Matrice 100 using a red edge camera, and we also use a small clipper aircraft with a hyperspectral camera to get hyperspectral data. And then we have ground control points at different places in our fields, and then we also do georeferencing using basic RTK GPS. And once we have all the images, then they are all processed and georeferenced, and then we have we extract vegetation indices for different plots, and so we have different indices like NDVI, the normalized difference vegetation index, or canopy temperature, depending on the different camera that was used to take data. So if you have a thermal camera, we have canopy temperature data. And once all the data is taken, we have the different plots and different indices for every plot. And the next slide, please. So here we have information about how this data is used at CIMIT. So we do prediction modeling. So we have all the phenotyping data, the yield data, and then we have genotypes data. So about 50,000 lines have been genotyped so far at CIMIT. And then we have the high, we have environmental covariates like temperature, precipitation, humidity, and all those factors. And then we use all this information collectively or in separate different models to train multivariate prediction models. So we're trying to predict grain yield here using the spectral indices or using molecular markers or using environmental data. And once we train these models, we try to estimate something known as a breeding value of the lines. So we're trying to predict the performance of wheat lines for grain yield. And then we select lines with higher breeding values and use them for advancing generations. So this is a quick process that we can do to speed up conventional breeding. And on the lower right corner of this slide, I have some prediction accuracies that are within and across years. So these are two different environments that we test yield for, the drought stress and the heat stress environments. And as you can see, within year predictions, using high-throughput phenotyping data from, this is just the normalized difference vegetation index, and that's about 0.46 and 0.56. So these are quite high within years when you try to predict. But when you try to predict the yield across years using some previous year's data to predict the next year for an unknown future environment, then that prediction becomes challenging. And so one of the things that we would like to see is can we use some crop growth models to be able to incorporate a lot of other meteorological variables and account for soil variability, microenvironmental field conditions, and use them to improve prediction accuracies. And that's all we have from here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Raghavan, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Please
feel free to go ahead and let us know if you run into any difficulties.
Yeah, I ran into difficulties. I think I'm okay now. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Raghavan Srinivasan, or Srini, from Texas A&M University. I'm a faculty here and working with geospatial sciences that includes all the components of GIS and remote sensing and GPS, as well as recently drone technologies for natural resource assessment or natural resource modeling. One of the models that we have developed is called SWAT, stands for Soil and Water Assessment Tool. This is the largest application of the SWAT model in the world today, and we have more than 4,000 peer-reviewed publications, and this tool has been currently used in several Feed the Future projects, including a project called ILSI, stands for irrigation for small scale dairies, for small holder farms. So in applying this, we use the Earth observation both as an input to the model, but also on the back end of verifying the model outputs, actually. So in other words, where we have some other difficulties or deficiency in ground truth data sets, we use the remote sensing data set to input as an input to this model, but also on the other hand, we will also be able to verify them, like such as evapotranspiration or leaf area index and NDVI biomass and net primary productivity and so on and so forth. So the model is quite versatile, and I think you heard some about the hydrological modeling before. This is more for hydrology, crop growth, water quality, that's including pesticides, bacteria, nutrients, and so on and so forth. Some of the areas that we worked on almost all around the world, actually. We have our applications almost in every part of the countries around the world. And most widely we use in the U.S., the North American countries, as well as the Europe and the entire Africa continent, actually. Currently, we have mainly focused on much more detailed analysis in Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Ghana, and we are also getting into the Western Africa in the second phase of our ILSI project. We looked at all kinds of cropping systems. That includes all the way from food and fiber, all the way to forest, bioenergy crops, grasses, including animal operations and so on and so forth. And some of the products that we generated over the years is you can easily look at how much water is available, how much is the soil productivity and the soil erosion and soil moisture, as well as looking at evapotranspiration and water pollution and so on and so forth. We also used remote sensing to identify the reservoir operations, actually our reservoir management, our reservoir water levels, especially when the countries are not sharing data across transboundary issues, we may have to use the remote sensing technology to identify the water levels and the potential risk of flooding downstream and so on and so forth, actually. And we also looked at a lot of large wetlands like in South Sudan and things like that. Some of the constraints that we always face everybody already alluded is the availability of the data, actually, and the quality of some of this data set. Sometimes the data are not available, both in time series and the spatial resolution that we are interested in, which is the nature of the data. So we have to live with that, actually. So it's not a complaint. It's more of opportunities that if more and more of this data that's generated from European satellite agencies and the U.S. and the Japanese and others could be all shared in a common platform, maybe there is a way to overcome some of these issues, actually. And access to existing data sets from the local, again, several of the previous speakers mentioned that. That's the same theme repeating here. And those data need to be made available in a public domain form or at least in a somewhat easily accessible form, actually. The next topic of big data is both an opportunity and a constraint. It is just evolving, so it has got a long way to go in terms of making the data become available in a consistent and uniform form. So such as the Google Earth Engine is one of the fine effort to make the data available in a consistent form and easy access to the computing requirement and so on. So we are using Google Earth Engine in a lot of our applications, but they do exist in different formats, so that becomes a challenge, actually. How do we transfer data? Some of this data is so huge, it's not easy to manipulate them when they are all in different format and things like that. The opportunities, like I said, the cloud systems as well as the big data initiatives and various area is going to become a real opportunity in the future for new research and collaborative research and be able to integrate both model data as well as the Earth observation data into one platform. And the validation and verification of some of this data is always questionable. So this is where we need some kind of a crowdsourcing or people could able to chime in and provide their input, just like how the private companies are collecting crowdsourcing data for their benefit. Like, take an example of traffic. So now you can get a real-time traffic through crowdsourcing, actually. So similar manner, we could be able to collect data through crowdsourcing and improve the remote sensing or the Earth observation data set. Capacity building is always required, actually, because the technology is changing so rapidly. We have to keep up on our toes to make sure everybody is on the same board and able to use the same technology and tools and software and so on and so forth. So capacity building is a very, very integral part of any success coming future. And so far, the real data is becoming an issue in terms of accepting model data versus remotely sensed data. Both are considered as modeled, actually. It's not a real observation, so those need to be supported. So that means there is a way to accept the model results that either going through a remote sensing or Earth observations or vice versa should able to easily interchangeable and able to go hand in hand in terms of exchanging knowledge and information and so on, actually. So let me stop right there and maybe answer a few questions later.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Estefania, you're up next.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. Today I'm going to show you very briefly the work that we're doing at AMA, that is the Agricultural Monitoring in the Americas, a very young initiative that was launched formally last year, but started in 2012. So AMA is a GeoLand regional network coordinated by the University of Maryland. I'm a part of the AMA team with Antonio Sanchez, Matt Humber, and John Kenniston that Alisa Wickraft leads. So who we are and what we are doing. AMA is a regional network that enhances national monitoring system and their participation in the GeoLand community. So GeoLand is a G20 initiative created in 2011 together with AMIS due to the high volatility on commodity prices. The AMA working group, while still developing its priorities working areas, broadly focuses on assessing data to information needs in the Americas, fostering research collaboration towards operational methods, including participation in the JCAM and RAP networks, capacity development and technology transfer in the use and management of Earth observation datasets toward producing actionable information, moving Earth observation information into the hands of decision makers. So which are the geographies and crops? AMA works in all the Americas, North, Central, and South America. AMA aims to have participation from all regional countries. Some of the crops that we work are, for example, maize, wheat, soybean, rice, sorghum, millet, teff, beans, among other crops that the different countries might be interested. Our partners are not only countries' ministries, but also INEAS from Latin America, nonprofit associations, among others. So the constraints. Well, as AMA, we try to make Earth observation accessible to different users levels, like regional, national, and also local. So after assessing data to information needs in the Americas, we discovered that there are many public resources for remote sensing data that are free, such as Earth observation-based products like crop maps, calendars, yields, Earth observation-based tools, tabular data, and then like CapDev tools like webinars and training models. But the problem that we find in the Americas, especially in South America and the Caribbean, is that not everyone is aware of those resources. And there are also many good national resources for remote sensing, but they are sometimes hard to find, or they are located in very specific portals that are not very well known for the international community, and sometimes even for the same countries. So here we saw an opportunity. We found a need for a centralized place to find regional Earth observation data. We realized the important need that the AMA community had for understanding and finding different Earth observation products, not only for their own regions, but also for other places. So we started developing a section in our website called Resources, where with the help of all the partners, we start populating with different data sets, like tutorial presentations, links to databases, crop maps, and even some reports that partners are producing, like monthly or weekly. But we reached a point that we need to go a step further to make this effort more collaborative. So with the help of my colleagues, Antonio Sanchez, John Kenniston, and Mike Humber, we developed the AMA Resource Hub. So this platform uses GeoNode software together with a combination of other software such as GeoServer. So the idea of the hub is that it's a framework, an environment that facilitates a series of complex structures to manage resources such as database, maps, and any Earth observation needs that the users might have. So the idea is for our partners to be able to share the information that they have, tutorials, for example, or conference that they go to, like also geo-reference data, but in a very user-friendly environment. So we started this new platform early this year, and we're going live this week. So you can access using the website that is in the screen. So far, the contributions and instructors are being very positive, and we're excited with the opportunity of making these things easier for the end users and for the generators. And also the idea is that it's a collaborative community. For any of our partners, we try to help them with any issues that they might have, or like to locate specific resources that they might need, or different ways to show the work that they are doing in the different locations. So, well, that's all. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks very much, Estefania.
All right. Last but not least, we have Jowoo Koo.
I think you've been able to.
Hi, can you hear me?
Here, speak again. There was a little blip right there, but I think you sounded
okay. Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little hot, but I think it'll be fine once you kind of get going.
Okay. As the last presenter of the webinar today, I'd like to give another example on the platform and aggregating of the data. So from CGIAR side, we have been also trying to understand what kind of data we have collectively from all these data locations and how we can make them more useful and better organized for the data modeling and data science in Earth observation. So the map you're seeing now is the location of our research. We georeference like 15 years worth of our journal article from CGIAR, and we found about 1,000 research locations and auto studies from 8,000 scientists from all 15 centers. Our research stations are located in 57 countries, and many of them also from the CMIS presentation are also being used for germplasm trials and breeding, etc. So we have lots of locations, lots of possibilities and data sources, but if you ask, okay, so where to find all these data, then the answer is not simple, and that's where we try to do a better job. So back in 2017, CGIAR launched a program called...
I'll just ask you to back away from your mic a little bit. You're just a little bit too loud.
Oh, it's too loud.
Yeah, just move back just a little bit.
Okay. How about now?
So?
We are a platform. So platform for big data and agriculture is a program are launched in 2017 as one of research support platforms. And we basically support agriculture scientists to harness the power of big data. There are lots of activities being supported by this program, and the main kind of module or flagship within the platform is called Organize, and that's where a lot of data creation, data generation support, and management work is happening. And yeah, I'd like to just give a little bit of example for that. As we saw before, there are lots of data sources out there, but it wasn't easy to find where to go and what kind of data is being generated from CGIAR. So we are working together with all 15 CGIAR centers. Now we have a flagship product called Guardian. There is a URL in the slide, so if you can go follow the link after the webinar, you will be able to search any data set of your interest, area, and topic, and you will see what kind of data is available. Another thing we are trying to do a better job is not just making data open and make it findable, but also make it really useful in interoperable and ontology, and other efforts are being added. Like, for example, this slide is illustrating our effort to create a use case together with crop modeling community. So that they can find data from different sources, in this case, three different sources, link them together on the fly for the most useful format for crop modeling application. We try to continue exploring ways to make our data more useful and more discoverable and findable for different modeling communities. We recently ran a survey to our research the geospatial scientists, community of practice in CGIAR, we found many different types of data, including land use, land cover, land trial, and household survey data, etc. A lot of applications are on supervised classification and also mapping outcomes using proxy indicators and modeling for scenario analysis. So we saw a lot of opportunities. The applications are already being developed. However, as discussed earlier slide, we also have obstacles, and like, for example, not always, there are not always useful and reliable statistics data to begin with, so sometimes we just have to do our own data collection to improve representativeness of our data and calibration validation. It would be better to consolidate this effort together with other parties, like, for example, institute presenting in this webinar. And yeah, so maximizing value of data already collected has been a challenging issue within our institution. Like incentivizing researchers to make extra effort to make better use of data has been always challenging. And we are trying to do a lot of cultural change and encouragement of our to our researchers to make better use of the data already collected. Another thing we started seeing is that the biases in published data. We oftentimes publish more successful stories and data showing significant like the treatment effect rather than you know really messy and uncertain nature of our trials and experiment on the ground. So yeah, this is one of the things we'd like to also discuss with whoever is having same problem, similar issues in the research area. Yeah, and also responsible data management is a continuously challenging issue that as a community we all have to work together to ensure the privacy and ethics are being handled correctly. Still, despite all the challenges and obstacles, a lot of potential benefits are there. Yeah, like, for example, avoid unnecessary duplicate collection of data once all the data already available and in searchable format. And also, as a researcher, I mean, making data more useful and aggregating and make it available to our researcher is really increasing our visibility and validity and reproducibility of research is just academically really critical role that we play. Strengthening our capacity was mentioned before. And just another thing I want to point out is so not only aggregating data already collected, another strand of activities that we are doing is standardizing data collection from the beginning. And yeah, hopefully we have other chance to also present that in some other occasion. So yeah, I will stop there for more questions and answer later. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. This is Paul Tanger again. I'm reconnected and apologies for dropping off a bit there, but thanks Julie and others for helping resolve those issues and I'm glad you all stuck around for this. So I wanted to ask a question to Narendra or Robert, and you both mentioned this in